Thank you. This is Judge Wheelock, and we are back on the record at 10:47 a.m. on December 12th, 2023. And I will have the marshal call the next case.
Now calling A230567, State of Minnesota respondent versus Samuel Morton Post III, appellant.
And counsel, I think you're both probably aware of this, but you will each have 15 minutes for your principal argument. And counsel for appellant, you will have an additional 5 minutes for your rebuttal. There is a clock in the corner of the screen, and you should both be able to see that. That's our timer today. It'll be set, reset each time someone new speaks. Can you both see that? Okay,
Yes.
great. And I would ask you to each please introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument and your client or who you represent. Feel free to explain to us how to pronounce your name or your client's name. And please mute yourself when you are not speaking, but leave your video on. And finally, if either of you has any concerns or any problems with the technology this morning, please let me know right away. We want to take some time to get that fixed if that happens, because we want to make sure that we hear from both of you. So, with that, I think we can go ahead and get started. And counsel for appellant, there are 15 minutes on the clock. Please begin when you are ready.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Rebecca Ireland, and I represent the appellant Samuel Post. Following a bench trial, Post was convicted of perjury for falsely stating his bank account balance at a hearing on a motion to modify his child support obligation. Post asked this court to reverse his perjury conviction because the statement he made, I'm sorry, because the state did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the statement he made was material. To constitute perjury, a false statement, of course, must be material, meaning specifically that it must be capable of influencing the decision that the decision maker has to make. Thus, the analysis must begin with the specific decision before the child support magistrate in this matter, in the underlying matter. To decide that motion, the magistrate had to calculate the current child support obligations of the parties, Mr. Post and his ex-wife. And the magistrate made that scope of the hearing quite clear at numerous points throughout the proceeding. Thus, the single issue on appeal is simple. Did the state prove that Post's bank account balance could have influenced that computation of child support? And the answer is no. At trial, the state did not prove that the party's savings would have or could have influenced the magistrate's decision on how to arrive at their current obligations of child support. The state's key witness at the perjury trial, in fact, Seth Keyser, the county attorney who handles child support matters, conceded this point of fact and law. He said, and I encourage you to look at his cross-examination at page 55, he said that savings cannot be considered under his belief in the child support calculation. He explained that he is the one who raised the topic of Mr. Post savings solely because it relates to enforcement actions by the county, but he conceded that he brought no motions or counter motions raising such matters before the magistrate. He admitted in his cross-examination at the perjury trial that the sole question before the magistrate was to compute child support obligations moving forward and nothing else.
So, counsel, can I ask? There is a provision. I'm wondering how much one gets into the merits of a potential or of a motion to modify, because there are the PICs, the standards that are the presumptive standards based on income, and then in the child support law, there's also provision for deviation from the child support guidelines that can be based on earnings, income, circumstances, and resources of the parent. And so when we look at this, could have affected, et cetera, I'm wondering how far one gets into, let's say, for example, that the omitted information had been like one of the parents has $1 million in savings, or that the lied about information. That could be relevant to departing from the guidelines. And I'm wondering how the resources by statute under the deviation from child support guidelines statute. So how does that factor in, and what's the job of the state? What's our job on reviewing that and determining whether lying about resources is or is not material in a given case?
Certainly. So within the scope of review on a claim of insufficiency, I believe that the court and the parties should really be cabined by the state's evidence at trial, because the question is not, you know, whether under some circumstance in the right case, could there be deviation factors that would be material. The question is whether the state presented sufficient evidence at this trial that the information that Post made about his bank account could have influenced the child support calculation. And the reality
so
is,
does
here's
that
what
mean that we need to research child support cases to determine whether in this context that amount of money could have justified a deviation from
no,
the presumptive?
I don't think so. Oh, pardon. I think it's really the state's burden at trial to prove this essential element, because materiality is an essential element. And it really is, I think, under the Burnett standard, it's case specific. The question isn't whether this information is generally relevant within the scope of child support matters, because relevancy is not necessarily materiality. It's whether in this case, the information was so probative of the ultimate issue that it could have swayed the ultimate issue. And that burden is on the state to present that information to the trier of fact.
The trier of fact.
Oh, go ahead.
So the trier of fact in this case, of course, was the district court. And we do have the benefit, consequently, of sort of knowing what the district court's reasoning was as to how the evidence established the element of materiality. And one thing that the district court relied on was that the savings account balance could have been used by the child support magistrate in figuring out how to handle the arrears, you know, because he owed something like $6,000 in back child support. And I'm wondering if that was an appropriate consideration, whether that's true, and whether that was an appropriate consideration for the district court to make in considering whether there was proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Thank you for that question. I don't think it was appropriate for the trier of fact here, the district court, to venture into territory that was not properly before the magistrate and that was outside the scope of the magistrate's decision. You know, as to the district court's reasoning or findings there, I do believe for that reason they're clearly erroneous. I don't believe there's evidence in the record to support the finding that Mr. Post's statement was material because it could relate to arrears, and because it could relate to arrears, therefore it relates to the child support computation. That effectively is the finding on materiality. And I don't see any support in the law or the record for it. I think it reaches beyond the record, and I think it improperly conflicts two distinct areas of law. And Mr. Keyser explained that those are distinct areas, that, you know, what bears on arrears and Post's ability to pay arrears and the county's enforcement actions as to that is really different from the computation of a child support obligation. And the record is rife with references that that was the sole issue before the magistrate to compute child support. Mr. Post's motion, his motion had nothing to do with arrears.
Ms.
I hope that answers your question.
Just to follow up on that, so is it your position then that the magistrate could not take into account the amount of arrears that may have been, that the appellant may have had in looking at whether to deviate from the child support guidelines and considering his motion to modify child support when looking at all earnings, income, circumstances, and resources? Would the arrears not be something they could consider when they look at the circumstances and the resources of that individual?
Based on the record before us and what the state presented at the trial, I don't think there's anything that could support that theory. I don't see anything in the record that could support magistrate could consider the arrears in computing the child support obligations. And the magistrate made clear that after Mr. Keyser brought up the issue of arrears, which was frankly late in the hearing, late in the child support hearing, you know, she said that the county has a lot of enforcement tools. Those issues are not before me. And she cautioned a number of points throughout the hearing that her role was to determine child support. So there's, back to your original question, there's nothing in this record to suggest that the arrears would impact that determination.
So let me clarify. Are you saying that both as to any amount of arrears that he may have had and as to any amount that he may have had in the savings account, that those are excluded from the consideration of the circumstances and resources, including real and personal property? And if so, then if you could explain to me what circumstances and resources, you know, can be considered.
Yeah. So I'm not going to opine on the general realm of family law, but on the issue that's in this case. And the matter comes back to what the evidence is on what factors could influence or have the tendency to influence the magistrate's decision. Now, the magistrate made clear at the hearing, the only factor that would influence her decision was arriving at the current income of both of the parties. She made intimations that because of the nature of this case being a general assistance case, an IVD case, that she was very limited, and the sole considerations that she would undertake to consider and that could influence her decision were income. And that includes any periodic payments, that includes general assistance, medical assistance, workers' comp, disability payments, wages. That is the entire universe of factors that the magistrate was concerned with. Thus, upon this record, those are the only factors that have could have influenced her decision.
Can I ask
and
you,
Frank,
so you referred to what happened at the end of the hearing with the county attorney. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought what was happening there was a request by the county to sort of freeze the assets, and that the district court said, or the magistrate rather, said that's, you know, beyond my scope. Are you suggesting that the magistrate, are you telling me actually that the record says and that the magistrate told the county that the resources are beyond the scope?
The magistrate never made any statement whatsoever about Mr. Post savings or his ex-wife's for that matter, or their assets. The magistrate made no statement as to whether assets or arrears would bear on her computation of child support. So I suppose the record is silent as to that. She did say freezing assets, that's beyond what I'm going to do today. You have the ability to raise motions and pursue other actions that could speak to that. Yeah. And you know, the arguments that I've outlined thus far on the record and in my briefing, frankly, I don't see the respondent disputing any of it. I don't see the respondent arguing that the party's assets could have influenced the child support calculation. Instead, I think that the state is focusing not on the single motion that was before the magistrate, which was post-motion, but instead focusing on these other enforcement interests that Mr. Keyser had. But Mr. Keyser acknowledged, first of all, that he brought no motion or counter motion, that those issues were not properly before the court. He effectively conceded that in the criminal trial. And what's more, just because an issue came up at the hearing does not in turn make it material to the ultimate issue. You know, respondent has advanced a theory of liability that seems to be that because arrears came up, because Mr. Keyser wanted the magistrate to reach those issues, that topic becomes material to the magistrate's decision on Mr. Post's motion. But I think that confuses the issue. Not all the information that comes before a fact finder is going to be relevant, let alone material to the ultimate issue within the meaning of Burnett. And we have that really well-defined definition from this court in Burnett. But secondly, I think the issue here is far more simple than respondent characterizes it. Really, it is about the trial evidence and whether the state submitted enough evidence, proper evidence, to prove that Mr. Post's savings and his ability to pay arrears would impact the decision of his motion to modify, which the magistrate made clear was cabined to the party's income. So for that reason, Post's false statement about his bank account was simply not material to his motion.
Hey, it might have been... I can't seem to find it in front of me, and I thought I had reviewed. So the form that he filled out with the request to modify had a had category on one of the pages for the savings account that he left blank. And I think that his motion to modify and the transcript from that hearing were both submitted as evidence in the perjury trial. And so is it your position then that the... there's no real reason to have the line item for the savings account on the original form? I mean, doesn't that indicate to us that, in fact, that is a material consideration?
We don't know that if it is a material consideration solely by virtue of its inclusion on that form. There's no doubt that there is a line item on that form, and there are many line items on that form that may or may not actually bear on the ultimate issue of how to compute child support in a general assistance case, an IVD case.
So would you disagree that it's on the form because it could influence that?
No, I don't think that the state has shown by virtue of its inclusion on court form that the information is so probative that it's capable of influencing the ultimate decision. The court...
Thank you, Ms. Ireland.
Yes.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And so we'll reset the clock. And next we'll hear from Respondents' Counsel. Mr. Campion, when the clock is ready and you are ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jacob Campion. I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the state of Minnesota here on behalf of Respondent. And I just want to start by talking about the meaning of the word material in this context. And there's been reference to the definition from Burnett, but there's an also important meaning that comes from the statute in 609.48. And that is that a defendant cannot use as a defense that the false statement was not used, or if it was used, did not affect the proceeding. And I think that's a very important piece of this. When you look at the form and you have that place for bank accounts, and then you have 518A.43, which was referenced, where it says that a child support, in addition to the child support guidelines, the court must take into consideration the following factors in setting or modifying child support or in determining whether to deviate upward or downward: all earnings, income, circumstances, and resources of each parent, including real and personal property. So that's why the form asks about bank accounts. And you don't need to research, you know, other child support orders to see if this amount of money would have, you know, affected, because all that needs to be shown is that it's possible that it might have.
So can I ask, relative to our standard of review, and then when we look at the... and your argument now, when we look at the district court's findings, the finding that I think about materiality, if I'm on the right section, because that comes up twice, but I believe I am on page 13 of the court's order, had Mr. Post disclosed the over $17,000 in his savings account, this may have changed the amount of child support ordered in that the arrears could have been paid off or down, and that would not have been a factor to determine how much support in the future Mr. Post can afford to pay. I'm not sure I follow that exactly. The court finds the savings account information is material because it has a tendency to influence, is capable of influencing the decision. Do we need, in doing a sufficient, what do we need to evaluate whether that reason, is that a factual finding that is we're limited to in evaluating whether there's sufficient evidence to sustain materiality? And is that an accurate factual finding on materiality?
Yes.
Because it doesn't reference deviations, for example, which is what we've been talking about.
Correct. And I think there's two issues that are going on at the hearing. And the one that the district court relied on was the arrears. But so at the child support hearing, there were two issues. One, what was the amount he was going to be ordered to pay moving forward? But then two, the county raised the issue of his arrears and how to address that given the assets that he had available and the debt that he had. So the county raising it put it before the magistrate. Unlike some of the other topics that were referenced by appellant, the magistrate didn't cut that off or say it wasn't relevant. In fact, after the county was done, she turned to the appellant and said, you know, do you have any questions for the county about the calculation of your income right now, number one, or anything that she testified to, which is to the arrears. And so the arrears were before the child support magistrate, that he owed it, that he had assets to pay it, and that the county requested that the magistrate order a payment plans, a repayment plan, excuse me.
And so how does that translate into materiality?
It translates to materiality because once the county raises that issue, it is then something that is capable of influencing the decision. It doesn't matter what the child support magistrate ultimately did. The state didn't need to submit the order. It didn't need to call the magistrate as a witness to testify as to what was influencing her. All that they need to show is that it is something that might have influenced the decision, and a party raising an issue and asking for relief puts the issue before the decision maker. Whether she ultimately makes a ruling on that or not, it makes it possible that it could have influenced the decision and makes lying about the bank account material.
And it could have influenced by, I mean, we know what the argument is that the magistrate was focused on income, not on arrears, not on the resources, and that therefore it's not material. What is your response to that?
Yeah, so it's we're not arguing that it's material to the formula, which is kind of where the hearing started. And as you pointed out earlier, the formula is just a starting point that calculates a presumptive amount that then can be deviated from under certain circumstances. And then the county raises the issue of the arrears and requests the magistrate to order a repayment plan. And so that issue and the bank account, you know, as a source to pay the debt is all material information within the special meaning of material in this context. You know, we're not using the typical meaning of material. All it is that it's capable of influencing the decision. And as I mentioned before, you know, a defendant can't say like, you know, it wasn't used or it did not actually affect the outcome of the proceeding. So it's this unique area where we have a special meaning of the word material. But I think the record's clear that issues that are connected to the bank account were before the magistrate.
Mr. Campion, can you tell us whether Mr. Post was asking for the magistrate to apply the rubric or the chart that has presumptive child support obligations, or was he asking for in the modification some type of deviation from those guidelines?
I believe, well, he was pro se, so he was just arguing that I don't have any income, but I believe he was believed that the formula would spit out zero because he didn't have any income. I don't think he was asking to deviate from the amount. I think he was saying, I've been injured, I'm no longer able to work, I don't have any income to pay child support.
I'd like to get back to a question that Judge Smith asked that I don't think you had an opportunity to address. And that is, are we as the reviewing court in a court trial situation bound by the reasoning of the district court in its analysis of whether there was sufficient proof of a particular element? So just to put that question in the context of this case, You know, the district court's sole rationale for determining that the evidence of materiality was sufficient was that this arrears analysis that we've talked about a little bit this morning. Are we stuck with that as the reviewing court, or is it possible for us to, you know, determine that materiality was proven because resources was a part of the, you know, a factor that the child support magistrate could consider?
Yes, and I apologize for not circling back to that, but to answer it, no, I don't think you're stuck with arrears if you prefer to go the deviation route. The only question before, you know, this court can affirm on grounds that aren't relied on by the district court. So the only question here is there sufficient evidence in the record to satisfy the materiality element? And so if the court, you know, doesn't want to address arrears and wants to address the modification request, you have the form and you have 518A.43 that demonstrate that you don't just stop with the formula. There are other considerations that must be taken into account in every case to determine whether that's the appropriate amount to pay. And so this court could affirm on the alternative ground that the bank account was relevant to the child support calculation.
Is an obligor's outstanding obligations, are an obligor's outstanding obligations relevant to determining the on a motion to modify to determining what the future child support will be?
I think it could be given the broad language of 518A.43, but I think it's an easier analysis just to say that the county raised it and asked for relief, you know, arrears.
Yeah, because when I'm reading, now I'm reading again, like the district court's reasoning. I think what the district court is saying is, and maybe this was obvious to everyone already, and I was just confused for a second. If the arrears are paid off, that's out of the picture, and you wouldn't have to pay, you, that neither the $17,000 nor the arrearages have to be considered in what obligations he has going for what, you know, and that it can just set the child support, you know, without consideration of that money or the arrearages, because it would have paid it off. And does that reasoning make sense? In other words?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think you see this in the child support statutes, is that what the legislature is trying to get to is, you know, people's finances are complicated and they're affected by a lot of different things. And they don't want to just create a formula that spits out a number that doesn't take into account, you know, unique situations where, you know, you have someone who's not working, so they don't have any income, but they have, you know, a large sum of money in a bank account. And so it's giving the magistrate discretion to look at all those things. We have a presumptive formula, but then consider everything and find the number in your discretion that is going to meet the needs of this particular family, given how complicated financial situations are and how different, you know, family to family it is. Happy to answer any further questions. But if not, the state would ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Campion. So we will reset the clock and we will return to counsel for appellant for rebuttal of 5 minutes. And Ms. Ireland, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up just on a couple points briefly. First, as to a question that the panel asked at a number of times throughout the hearing thus far today, relates to whether resources were material in this case because they are generally relevant as deviation factors. If it were true that Mr. Post's resources were material to the magistrate's decision, then it follows that it would be true that the other party to the proceeding, his ex-wife's resources, would have been material and necessary information to be elicited upon the record. Otherwise, the magistrate would have no way of reaching a decision on the motion. It cannot be that the resources of one party is so probative as to the issue before the court so as to sway that ultimate issue, whereas the resources of the other party is of no moment. That logically doesn't track, and it's also inconsistent with the magistrate's focus here. I'd like to comment on respondent seemingly narrowing the state's argument here, which I think is helpful. Respondent argued today that there were really two issues before the court. And he articulated that there was first the computation of child support, and secondly, and that resources relates to the arrears issue. Well, here, the issue is not whether resources are material to arrears. I'm not making that argument. The issue is whether it was material to the motion to modify. And the state did not submit sufficient evidence at trial to support that. And that is why reversal is required, not because resources doesn't relate to arrears enforcement, perhaps. And I'd like to talk about arrears. And this notion that this issue was properly before the magistrate, I think, is a bit suspect and requires some questioning. Mr. Keyser acknowledged he didn't properly raise this issue. He conceded at the perjury trial that he brought no motion or counter motion. At the hearing before the magistrate, consistent with General Rule of Practice 364, defined the scope of the hearing at the outset and said, we have one motion, ensured all the parties had the motion, ensure it was properly served and filed, and then proceeded, said pointedly, I caution you, the role is to compute child support. And she was solely going to do that based upon income. The record.
So let me ask, it does
make it clear.
I mean, I think the point is if the obligor is going to have to, a future obligation is going to be to pay off the arrears, right? That's something that, you know, is going to be a monthly problem, is paying off the arrears because they're there, they're an obligation. And so I think the point of this is, well, if they those were paid off, that's not an obligation going forward. Is it your argument that the obligations of a obligor going forward are not relevant to determining, or not material, would not be material, I guess, to determining the amount of future child support? In other words, it could be to pay off arrears, it could be to pay off, you know, his attorney, it could be to buy, you know what I mean, to pay off another debt, a car debt or whatever. I mean, that's how I was reading the district court's thinking about what their arrears meant. It's not an enforcement action, it's considering what impact and burden A will pose on going forward.
If I understand your question correctly, I don't think that the record here supports the finding of fact, the reasoning that the district court provided in its order. There was no testimony at the perjury trial. There were no exhibits that support the theory that the arrears payments or ability to pay arrears would impact the child support computation. I'm not going to opine whether that is impossible as a matter of law, but the record is silent on that issue. The record doesn't support that theory. Mr. Keyser, at the criminal trial, ultimately conceded in his cross-examination that these were really two separate issues. And it sounds like the respondent today is acknowledging that these are two separate issues.
Ms. Ireland, with your last remaining seconds, I wonder if you could address the question that Judge Gaetis posed to opposing counsel. Are we bound by the district court's reasoning?
No, you are bound to tailor your review to the evidence that's within the record, the trial evidence, and determine whether that's sufficiently proved beyond a reasonable doubt standard that Mr. Post's false statement about his bank account balance could have materially influenced the computation of child support, not arrears, but child support. And for that reason, and the reasons argued in my brief, we argue that the conviction cannot be sustained and should be reversed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I don't see any follow-up questions. So I just want to thank both of you for your time today, for the briefs that were submitted and the argument. We really appreciate all of that. It will be very helpful. So the case is submitted. and an opinion will be issued in the statutory timeframe. Thank you.
Thank you.